Welcome to the Wine Muse. I'm your host, Linda Rez, and I'm here with William Pollard from Wild for Washington Wine. Hey, William.
Hey, I just pulled a cork out of a bottle of wine. How are you?
Good timing. And what is that bottle you just opened up?
Well, this is a wine from Chile. It's called, the brand is Montes Alfa, and it's a 2008 Merlot from the Colchagua Valley, the Apalta Vineyard. So this is a Chilean wine. And I hope it's not corked. The cork smelled kind of overly corky to me, so.
Okay, and our topic for this little section is going to be Chilean wines that you've been drinking, and you're going to give us some information. How do you spell that, the Montes Alfa?
It's Montes.
Okay.
And then Alpha, Alpha.
And is this available in most people's supermarkets or wine stores?
Well, I believe so, because I found it in town here in the Tri-Cities where you can't always find things. What surprised me is this is a 2008. And this summer I had their 2015 Sauvignon Blanc, which was amazingly good and my first 2015 vintage wine. And I also had their 2012 Carmenere. So there's no way this is a current vintage. But it was $18 at the wine store in town, and I figured that that's probably a pretty good deal.
Yeah, that's a great deal.
Actually, it smells good.
What is the varietal again? Did you say Merlot?
This is Merlot. So what I found interesting about this is Chile has become really well known for Carmenere. And a lot of the Carmenere was mistakenly labeled Merlot. And people were, Chilean winemakers were and wineries were selling Merlot when it was Carmenere. So I'm assuming this is actually Merlot and not Carmenere, because they do bottle Carmenere. And according to the tasting notes, this has it's mostly Merlot with 10% Carmenere in it. So this is mostly a Chilean Merlot.
Okay. And what are they known for in Chile? You said the Carmenere. Is it mostly the reds that we gravitate to with Chilean wines?
It is the reds. Carmenere really has sort of become the signature wine for Chile. They're also very well known for their Cabernet Sauvignon and their Sauvignon Blanc. And that 2015 Sauvignon Blanc I had was just gorgeous. It was just a very beautiful, very finessed white wine. And in the heat of the summer, it went over really big. So
Carmenere, if it can be mistaken for Merlot, its basic properties are very similar to Merlot then? What differentiates the two?
So the story about Chile and Carmenere is that during the phylloxera outbreak in the mid-19th century, around the 1860s, most of the Merlot of the world died off. And what happened is a bunch of vignerons, vineyard managers, and winemakers went to Chile, and they planted grapes, and they made wine. And while the rest of the world kind of thought and forgot about the Carmenere in Chile, people thought that Carmenere was gone and pretty much an extinct grape variety. And then about 25, 30 years ago, it was rediscovered, where they thought it was Merlot mistakenly, and they discovered it was Carmenere. So Carmenere's had this resurgence. A grape variety that was thought to be pretty much extinct has resurfaced and emerged as one of the main wines of the world in that part of the world.
So they must have had to have done a laboratory test.
They did. They had to. They did a genetic test.
A genetic test, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so thinking that it was Merlot that whole time, I assume that it must have looked like Merlot on the vine and tasted like Merlot.
Right, and that was kind of the thing. You know, experts were drinking this Chilean Merlot, and they were like, well, that's a pretty interesting Merlot. It doesn't really taste like Merlot. And so they did the genetic test and figured out it was Carmenere instead.
Well, that's amazing. That's a great story.
Yeah, and so Carmenere's had this resurgence, and Chile has become famous for it. And Chile, they're producing some wonderful wines, and they've really invested a lot of effort, especially the last 15 years, and they're becoming acknowledged as an affordable high-end wine, across all the tiers of wines from the lower end to the higher end, very premium quality at a very reasonable price. So bang for the buck, Chile is kind of the place to go. So we did a tasting, Twitter tasting early this summer. focusing on Montes Alfa, and we interacted with Aurelio Montes, who is the winemaker in Chile. And they have a sister winery in Argentina called Kaiken, K-A-I-K-E-N.
So it's
the same family that owns it.
Okay.
But there are different brands, and the grapes are grown in, you know, two different countries. One, you know, so they have the Montes Alfa in Chile, and they have the Kaiken in Argentina. And the way they describe to us the difference between the two styles and the two countries is that Chilean wines have more acidity and tannins, and that Argentinian wines tend to be softer and sweeter. That was
Which do you prefer?
So if it's a wine from Argentina, they do gorgeous Malbec. You know, they do that high altitude, UV ripened. You know, the ultraviolet rays ripen the grapes in the Andes of Argentina. And then there's also they're making Torontes in Argentina too, where which is a white grape variety. Now, if you're talking Chile, I think Chile does everything.
And guess what? I just did a Google search, and I was wrong about the Andaluna. It's from Argentina, not Chile.
Ah.
So the Malbec was from, like you just said, Argentina.
Right. And so Argentina is famous for Malbec, and they're becoming better known for Torontes, which is a white grape variety. And then Chile does everything. I mean, they do Syrah, they do Cabernet, they do Merlot, they do Carmenere, they do Sauvignon Blanc, they do Chardonnay, and then they do a little bit of this and a little bit of that as well. So
you should expect it, though, to be a little bit more tannic, a little more acid if it's from Chile. So you got to get maybe prepared for that.
Yeah, right. Right. And there are, you know, a variety of different growing regions within Chile itself. They have like 14 different regions. Some are closer to the ocean. Some are a little further away from the oceans. So when you get further away from the oceans, you're starting to get more of the altitude because you're starting to go up the foothills of the Andes. Mm-hmm. So you have elevation as you're cooling, whereas as you approach the ocean, you have the ocean breeze as for your cooling.
So kind of, you know, like it is here in the United States. When
right,
you have
a little
your
bit.
California wines versus your Washington, more inland wines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit like that. So this wine, which now has been open about 8 minutes, smells really good to me.
2008. Now, did you just pour straight from the bottle, or are you doing some kind of decanting?
I'm doing both. So yes, and I'm definitely getting tannin. Like, I mean, really, some really nice tannin, and it definitely has the acidity. And there's fruit in there in the back of the palate. It's you know, a little earthy, definitely dry, and for having been open such a short time, it tastes pretty good to me for a 2008. That's $18 seems like a pretty good deal to me.
So you are right now, though, drinking it straight from the bottle?
Yeah, I just poured it into the glass, and I also have I decanted some as well. So that the one of the decanters just sitting there.
Okay, and you're letting it open up for maybe, 30 minutes?
And actually, the tasting notes recommend 30 minutes. I checked their website, and they had a really nice PDF for the vintage, considering it's not a current vintage. You know, lots of good technical details, the kind of stuff I like to see. Aged 12 months in French oak, 90% Merlot, 10% Carmenere. Very light filtering, which I like that as well.
Yeah, me too.
And they give you a recommended serving temperature of 63 to 64, which is probably what it is today in my room. And it says, can be cellared now or cellared for up to 6 years. So my guess is we're probably nearing peak ripe flavor right now.
Yeah, you said cellared 6 years?
It says up to, so it was probably released, I would guess, 2010. So probably you want to drink by next year.
Okay. So Chilean wines then, what other ones come to your mind when you think about, you know, going into your local shops and picking up a wine? What kind of names would people see?
Give me just a sec, because I have some that I have had this year. I absolutely adore.
Now, do you put everything on Wild for Washington Wine?
Everything that Chileans I like.
Okay.
I don't put everything up there because I don't. So, I don't. You know, I never do negative reviews for wine. I just not worth my energy or anyone's anger. So I only post the ones that I like, and then, you know, sometimes you just drink a wine and you go, "Oh, that was nice," but you know, it's dinner or you're with friends, and he's like, I should probably get another bottle and review that. But so there are wines that don't get reviewed. And then, of course, I go ahead.
Chile just had a big earthquake yesterday, right?
Yeah, I saw the post last night, and I looked this morning. I didn't see any updates. I know that California was expecting, you know, waves of 1 to 2 feet. They evacuated a bunch of people from the coastal regions in Chile. I know that some buildings went down. The adobe structures, a woman was killed because there were some, because the building collapsed. But Chile is probably one of the most prepared countries in the world as far as Chile, just because they're the most earthquake-prone region in the world.
Wow.
So
yeah, it was an 8.4. It lasted 3 minutes.
Yeah, that's – and, you know, their buildings in the big cities are built to withstand earthquakes. And they had sirens that evacuated people, it seems like, in a fairly timely manner to get them away from the dangerous locations, to get them out of buildings. So as far as anyone – being prepared, Chile seems to be the place that is the most prepared, because they have to be.
Yeah, they've had some major destruction there. I'm looking at the pictures right now. And the tsunami surge. I guess they're watching for that. Mm-hmm. And I saw some pictures of some ships that have been pushed around out there already earlier today. That's pretty destructive. Holy cow.
Yeah, they had a really bad one a few years ago that was just horrible. As far as wines, I'm a big fan of the Los Vascos, which is a Chilean brand. And these are affordable, everyday type of wines where you can get them for $10, maybe less, maybe a little bit more. They're in that sweet spot of, you know, price value. Mm-hmm. And Los Vascos also, they do a really nice reserve Cabernet, nice Chardonnay, and nice Rosé.
Okay.
They do some really nice wines. And, of course, we had that Hacienda Araucano Pinot Noir last November that we reviewed. And I was – so we remember when we first started the podcast, I think we were talking about Chile and Argentina and Pinot Noir. And I thought that Chile would be the place probably that would do Pinot Noir. And they are starting to do Pinot Noir now.
Oh, wow.
But maybe kind of early days for them. You know, they're still trying to find the best location, the best soils for growing the fruit.
Wow. I wonder how this is going to I wonder how this summer, with everybody having drought and now they've got this earthquake, I wonder how that's going to affect their vineyards.
So they do dry farming in Chile. So that's a good question.
No irrigation for the most
part? For the most part, they don't irrigate. It's dry farming. So you have to hope you get the right amount of rain and not too much and not too little and at the right time and not too late. So it's you know, you trust in the weather, trust in God, say a prayer, and see what happens.
And that seems like that's the way it is for most wine growing regions. Everybody has the same issues.
Yes, absolutely correct.
As a matter of fact, California has had all these fires, and I think right in the Napa area, right?
Yeah, getting right into that area. It's hundreds of homes burned, destroyed, just crushing to see that. And fingers crossed and more prayers. So last week I was at Gordon Estate Winery here in Washington State, not too far from where I live, and I went to their harvest blessing. Okay. And they had a Catholic priest from Portland University. He came out and he blessed the Syrah, which is right there looking beautiful. And
wow.
We had a nice lunch, some nice wines. And then afterwards I met – they have a new – for the last 13 months they've had a new winemaker. Tyler Tennyson. He's a really nice guy, super sharp, and he's so freaking energetic and full of ideas. I mean, they seemed really taken with what Tyler's doing. So I had the chance to taste raw wine, you know, the juice that is starting to ferment, starting to, you know, show off a little hint of its potential. And so I tasted their Rosé of Malbec. I tasted their Chardonnay. And I tasted their, it's a native yeast ferment Chardonnay.
Oh, weird.
And some Syrah. And so it's more juicy than wine, but the flavors were just really exciting, just lively and, you know, the fruit. And of course you spit, you don't want to drink that stuff. But it looks like 2015 is going to be an absolutely phenomenal vintage. Just the flavors that were coming off that raw juice were just, you know, really phenomenal and exciting.
You think it's because of the drought?
So that's what people are saying.
Interesting.
you know, that we had a lot of heat, you know, a lot of heat, mm-hmm. but, you know, we still cool down at night for the most part. So you get, and so it's going to be an interesting vintage. It's going to be, it'll be different from other vintages, but it appears like it's just going to be another phenomenal vintage. That's what everyone's saying again.
So I wonder, I think that most of our side of the world has been in a drought.
Yes.
I'm not sure about Chile. Has Chile been in a drought?
That I don't know.
Okay. But a lot of us have been, so it may 2015 could turn out to be a pretty good year for everyone then on our side of the world.
It could be. I know at least in Washington State, we're pretty excited. Now, one of the concerns with the forest fires that, you know, we had these horrible forest fires around Lake Chelan and into the yeah. Canadian border. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of smoke from the fires. I mean, we were inundated here with smoke just because the way wind was blowing. And for like 3 weeks, the air quality here in town was absolutely miserable because you go outside and all you can smell is smoke from the fires. Mm-hmm. So that smoke will taint some of the fruit in the northern part of the state, in the at least in the Lake Chelan region, especially where the fires were, up towards the Canadian border. So the concern is how much will that affect the fruit? And so we will find out.
The smoke taint. That's a new one. Now, we had Siren Song Winery from Lake Chelan on mm-hmm. A couple months ago. Mm-hmm. Have you heard how they fared through all this?
So from what I've read, looks like most of the wineries were unaffected as far as the fire goes and damage. And Hard Road to Hoe, I follow them closely. They're right there on the north shore of Lake Chelan. And they brought in all their fruit, it looks like, and the fruit looks beautiful. I would be concerned about the fruit that's between Lake Chelan and Wenatchee, where it probably had a lot more smoke.
That's going to be interesting, and maybe it'll be better with that little bit of smoke added to it. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Very interesting.
Oregon's had similar issues when they've had fires in the past, and I know that they can do some chemical processes to reduce the amount of that smoke that gets into the grapes. So we'll see. Some of the vintages might be a little bit different. We'll find out.
Weird. Well, you know, that's what people who, when they really study wines around the world, and they can tell you which year and what location. I guess that's the kind of things they're using to identify the wine, understanding that what happened with the climate.
So when you don't irrigate and you depend on Mother Nature, vintage is everything, especially in France, where it might be, you know, shaping up to be a beautiful harvest, and then, the rain comes too early and the grapes get all the extra water. And that's going to make grapes that are less flavorful because they're going to suck up that water. The grapes are going to fill up with water, and it reduces the flavor of the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So that
point.
you don't want that.
Yeah. You don't want that water stealing all the flavor.
No, you don't want that.
Save a little bit for me.
Yeah, so vintage is especially important in other parts of the world, whereas for us, you know, we irrigate everything. The problem we have here is worrying about, in a drought situation, where do you get your water from? The good news is grapes use less water than most other agricultural products.
Right. They're in a drip system, aren't they?
They're on drip. Mostly on drip. Mm-hmm. They're not all on drip, but most of them are on drip.
Okay. So how's that Montes wine that you, the 2008 Merlot doing?
I'm thinking it's pretty dang good.
Really?
Yeah, I'm really quite pleased with it. Okay, I'm pouring out of the decanter now just to see what it's like. So the color isn't quite as bright, vivid red. It's starting to get a little age color. It's starting to... So it's not quite ruby or garnet. It's getting darker and leaning more, kind of, you know, hinting at maybe a brick color.
Okay. How is it on the nose?
So I'm getting, you know, a little more earth, a little less fruit. And I forgot to turn off the phone. That's my other phone.
No, don't worry about it. Just turn it off.
There.
Sometimes you get phones. So it's earthy and what? What else?
Ooh, I'm getting root beer. That's unexpected.
Root beer
candy. You know those root beer barrels, candy barrels.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it smells like. With some little earthiness in the background and maybe a little cherry. Oh, yeah, it's really dry. Oh, definitely cherry.
So how has it changed now that you've decanted it?
I think it's a little broader, just a little broader across the palate, kind of filling the mouth. It's focused kind of middle to back, but it just sort of, it's all over, the flavor's all over the palate. That's really nice.
That sounds good.
So, and the tannin didn't seem quite as obvious. It didn't seem as present right now.
Okay.
But just for a drinking wine, it's lighter bodied. It's not a heavy wine, but it's really tasty. I don't know what I'd pair it with. Probably with pork or maybe with, I don't know. So if I blind tasted this, I don't know what I would say it was, but just because I'm not sure I could tell you that it was Merlot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just because it's, Washington Merlots can be pretty big.
True. And this one isn't. But it's also got that 10% Carmenere in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not bad.
So you did an online chat with the winemaker from Montes, you were saying.
Yeah, so we spoke with Aurelio Montes of Montes Alfa, and we did a Twitter tasting with his Sauvignon Blanc and his Carmenere. And it was just a lot of fun to actually have a nice interaction with the winemaker and with the staff. They established the winery back in 1987 when it was originally called Discover Wine. They didn't say which year they changed the name to Montes Alfa, but I think changing the name to Montes Alfa was much better than Discover Wine.
Oh, yeah. Discover Wine.
Yeah, Discover. I don't know.
Like a tourist kind of thing.
Yeah, it does. Anyway, but what they've been able to do is to, I think they kind of put Chile on the map, and they showed the world that, you know, if you want to, you could actually produce premium wines in Chile. And so I think mission accomplished. They were able to do that. And that's also when we learned that they do the dry farming. And they own 90% of their vineyards. I didn't realize this, but Chile exports most of their wines around the world. Now, I've seen two different numbers. I saw that one person said Chile exports 75% of their wines, and someone else said Chile exports 95% of their wines. So I don't know. But either way, they make a lot of wine. They export a lot of the wine. You're getting a big bang for the buck, you know, tremendous value for the price. And, you know, there are higher end wines, which I don't see around here. The Montes Alfa is sort of a low middle, you know, it's sort of the one that they make the most of and spread it around the world. And, you know, I have no problems with this light tier of wine. It just seems like great value for the price.
Now, I should mention that we interviewed last year Rex Pickett, of the author for Sideways, and he did have a new book out last summer, Sideways 3, Chile.
Correct.
And so that, I guess that's his ventures in Chile, so somebody's interested in that. And I believe he said that the Chileans wanted him to come down and feature them in a book.
Right.
So he went ahead and did that and lived there and, you know, drank their wine. I'm sure he had a great time doing it.
Well, I believe he was there for 6 months.
6 months, wow.
And I would do that.
Yeah, just write a book.
I would love to go down there.
Easy, just write a book.
Yeah, and travel and, you know, taste and meet people. You know, just embrace the culture. I think it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, they have featured vacation trips, wine trips down there in lots of different wine magazines through the years, and it does look like quite an experience. They've got it really wrapped up well for tourists.
They do. And, you know, Montes Alfa also likes to talk about their efforts at sustainability and, you know, maintaining some of the local plants, as well as treating the soils with respect and recycling everything they do. And what I read is that they're essentially carbon neutral through their techniques at agriculture and planting and recycling. And they're treating the land with respect. So that's something that, you know, I think it's becoming more important to some of us that when we buy a bottle of wine, we want to know, you know, how environmentally responsible, you know, is the vineyard, is the production of the wine, and do they care about the water and the resources and the plants and the animals? And this winery in particular does seem to, and they have a lot of information on their website about how they approach sustainability. So you know, that's something to, you know, think about. And to, if you're looking at a couple of different brands, you might want to factor that into your purchasing decision.
Do you happen to know what part, how much of the country now is involved in the wine industry in Chile?
It's so getting exact numbers is tough.
Okay.
And I mean, we have the same problem here. I've spoken to growers that, and I've spoken to industry people that say that sometimes the numbers you see aren't really the real numbers because they don't necessarily want to divulge the real numbers for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So it's if you're looking at Chile as where grapes are grown, it's kind of in the middle third of the country.
Okay.
So when you, because Chile is just a long, narrow country, mm-hmm. and that middle chunk of the country, that middle third of the country is where all the grapes are grown. And once again, you know, there's the altitude and there's proximity to the ocean and then soil types. So, you know, different grapes, they're kind of like Washington State. They've been learning where the best places are to grow different types of grapes.
Okay.
You know, Pinot Noir grows really well here. Carmenere grows really well over here. Sauvignon Blanc, you know, 4 or 5 miles from the ocean. And it's going to be west of Santiago, so north of the Colchagua Valley, and Colchagua Valley is a little bit further south, and that's where they're growing their, you know, their Cabernet and their Merlot, and the big reds are being grown down there.
Be fun to visit. You make it sound good. All those places sound like great places to visit. Now, you said Montese also owns Kaiken?
So, right. So, Kaiken. It's a sister company. It's owned by the same family. And
but one's just in Argentina. Kaiken's in Argentina.
Yeah, right. Kaiken's in Argentina. And so the Torontes, which is the white wine, which is a Spanish grape variety, there's a region called Salta in Argentina. And that's where they're starting to become well-known for the Torontes that they're producing. And it has, you know, acidity, it has salinity, it has some tropical flavors, just beautifully balanced wine. It blew me away. Because Argentina, you think, you know, Malbec, right? Automatically you go Malbec. They probably do some other stuff, but I don't know what. But what is Torontes, this just beautiful white wine, very food friendly, be great with seafood, you know, shellfish, just that's in the Salta region. So and then Malbec, of course, you're going to Mendoza, you're going up into the Andes and anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 foot elevation, and you get all that UV that's supplying the heat units to ripen the Malbec grapes. So a totally different style from, you know, other parts of the world. You know, I think the highest we get in Washington State is about 1,500 feet, where we're doing some, you know, acidic whites and maybe some Pinot Noir. And you go down to Argentina, you're looking at 3,500, 5,000 feet. That's something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's Mount Rainier. When you drive over the pass, that's 4,000 feet, 4,400 feet.
Amazing.
We're not growing grapes there yet.
Right now. When you said they're thin, it's a thin country. It is really thin.
Yeah, Chile is. It's just long and narrow.
It's like a slice.
It is. And that's because you've got the mountain range. The Andes mountain range is like, boom, right there. And so you have this little strip of land and then the Andes mountains. So you don't, there's not a lot of territory for planting and growing.
And so when you're talking about inland there, it's not too far inland because there's not too much land inland in Chile.
yeah, right. Inland doesn't go very far inland.
No, Argentina does.
Yeah, Argentina's a totally different creature.
And there they are right next to each other.
Huh. So the wine's very fragrant, but it does have a little, you know, it smells a little old. It doesn't have that young, vibrant blast of fruit.
Okay. So if you were to go do this tour, you'd probably want to go do Argentina at the same time. If you're going to fly that far, you might as well do both if you have the time.
I would, yes. It just seemed... Seems a shame to go all that way to Chile, mm-hmm. the other end of the hemisphere, and not go to Argentina as well.
Absolutely. Well, bucket list. Put it on my bucket list. And there's the Falkland Islands down there. I always wonder, you know, they always talk about the British are always, you know, sending people to Falkland Islands.
Yeah.
And there they are right there.
Yep. That's a hot button. I probably wouldn't bring the subject up.
When you're there, you mean?
Yeah. Probably not something. Because and plus, you know, Argentina's having some tremendous problems right now with politics and the government. That's another thing I probably wouldn't bring up. So,
Well, as long as it's safe to go down there, it's safe, right?
I would go to Argentina over Mexico.
Okay, well, that says something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea the Falkland Islands were just down there. It's just a little tiny island.
Yeah, just tiny little territorial dispute location.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. Yeah.
You're going to not say much about that. Funny. Okay, so how's that wine coming along?
It's nice, but I would, pairing it with food, I have to go with something kind of light and delicate. Because the wine's kind of delicate. But this would be just, you know, a great, just sitting by the fire, taking in the sunset, having a nice relaxed evening at home, not talking about food really much at all. Maybe a really soft cheese, light cheese would go with this.
Mm. Those are my favorite wines, actually. I like those kind of standalone wines. As we wrap this one up, there's a lot of people who are, if they're listening, would want to be, you know, go out and buy a Chilean wine. And where would they start? I mean, if you had just given some advice on how to pick a good one, what would you say?
So I go to Google, mm-hmm. and I just try to use keywords like review, wine review, or Chilean wine review, or best Chilean wine, or recommended Chilean wine, or recommended wine, and see what comes up. Also, you can go to snooth.com, mm-hmm. and a lot of people have wine collections and they do a lot of reviews. The problem I have with wine reviews like that, mm-hmm. is it seems a little random, and you see one person will give it a, you know, like one star, mm-hmm. another person will give it 3 stars, mm-hmm. and people are all over the board as far as how they like or dislike wines. So you really need, so that's why I prefer wine writers and wine bloggers that I respect their opinion, and I find over time that we have compatible palates.
Okay.
So if you talk to someone and you start talking about wines that you have in common, and you start talking about different vintages and then different types, and you start agreeing more and more, that person probably has a palate that's closer to yours.
Okay.
And when you find someone that has a palate that's close to yours, if they recommend a wine, it probably means it's a wine that you would like.
True.
Now, I've met, you know, people where we have zero commonality in our preference for wine. And I've also met people who have written off types of wine just because they had a bad experience in the past and they refuse to go back and re-review that type of wine.
Right.
So there are a lot of ABC people who are anything but Chardonnay.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And they're missing out because there are so many styles of Chardonnay today and so many delicious types of Chardonnays that are being produced that they're missing out on a lot of pleasure.
Same with rosés, you know, same thing.
Yeah, and I myself personally, I got a little burned out this year on rosé.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've had rosés from all over the U.S. and I've had some European rosés. Now the rosé I had from Chile was wonderful, mm-hmm. but I had several California Chardonnay or several California rosés that I would pass and not recommend
it. I was over in Norway, and you know, we're going to switch gears, and there's going to be another episode following this one about mm-hmm. Norwegian wines. But one thing that happened when we were in Norway is that you know, they don't have many wines. We're going to talk about what they do have on the next show, but they do have a lot of European wines, you know, from France and Italy and Spain, readily available, and they drink a lot of wine in Norway. Mm-hmm. Not their own, but the rosés were very nice. Any rosé you picked off the shelf, in fact, almost any wine you picked off the shelf in Norway was fantastic, no matter what the price was.
So someone is doing their job.
Oh, yeah, somebody's doing their job, and I think maybe their palate is more sophisticated, so they expect more as consumers, but you couldn't get a bad bottle of wine there. And I'm talking about made there. They were all imported, but the rosés were fantastic. And there were a lot of different kinds we tried, but all of them were just wonderful.
Yeah, that shows that whoever is buying the wines, when they go out and they do the tasting and they do the purchasing, they've done their homework, and they know what people want to drink. And that's really essential. So I had a wonderful luncheon conversation with Christoph Hedges and Boo Walker. They're the marketing arm of Hedges Family Estate Wines on Red Mountain. And we had a leisurely 3-hour lunch. And we had a lot of wine.
A three 3-hour lunch. Yeah,
it was. It was my speed, my kind of lunch.
Yeah,
I think we had 6 wines and a multi-course lunch and a beautiful day, light breeze. It was just perfect, and it's on the blog.
Okay.
However, so I was talking to Christoph, and he and Boo, they travel all over the U.S. and they travel to Europe and they've been to China, and they sell their family wine.
Mm-hmm.
And his sister's the winemaker now.
Okay.
And he was telling me, I said, you know, I can go to Costco and get your wine at a really great price, your Red Mountain Reserve wine. He goes, yeah. He goes, some of the small wine shop owners complain that they can't compete on price with Costco because Costco has a lower price, right?
Right.
And my response was, if you can't hand sell a bottle of wine to a customer in your store, maybe you should be doing something different.
True.
Because if you have a nice bottle of wine and you're in a store, why not buy the wine in the store rather than going, oh, I can go to Costco and buy that for less? What I would do is if somebody said that to me and I was selling wine in the store, I'd say, well, let's open it and taste it and see whether I can convince you not to buy the wine today, right here and now. I'm going to share it with you.
Mm-hmm.
I would just open the bottle and pour it. And then I would have a bottle I could pour to other people coming in. Now open, let's taste it.
Well,
because it's not really as much about the price. It's about, you know, what is in the bottle, telling the story.
Yes.
Embracing the customer, saying, let's enjoy. Because when I worked in the winery and hand-sold bottles of wine, every one of those bottles I sold, you could gone to Safeway or Albertsons or Costco, and if they had it, they would sell it for less.
Mm-hmm.
But when the customer is at the winery, buying it direct from the winery, that wine has never left the winery. It's right there, and it's the moment. And you're pouring them the wine, and they can taste the wine how it tastes right now and make their decision based on how it tastes today, right now, at that
mm-hmm,
point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Well, that's very true. And I don't understand why they can't do a little bit of markdown, too. They generally don't when you're in wine stores. They usually it's pretty marked up. But also, Costco and Albertsons and Safeway don't have all the wines that you can get when you go to tasting rooms. And so, you know, there's those niche wines. The other thing I noticed is that some of the really good wineries now are selling out fast. In fact, I had one just recently. It was Jones of Washington,
mm-hmm.
Syrah from Wallouk Slope, and I loved it. Went back to buy some more. Sold out. You know, mm-hmm. I should have bought it, and I bought it from the winery. Actually, they were at a tasting room when it happened. And Walla Walla Vintners now, they're doing so well that their wine club is closed.
That happens, and that's, you know, that's the way it works. Yeah, there are
and
windows
I
of
use another one.
Yep, there are windows of opportunity, and you can debate it, and then not do it, or you just at the moment, I'm just going to do it.
Right, and when you get into those wine clubs, a lot of times they give you wines that the consumer can never get. Walla Walla Vintners does that. They get some off of the Pepperbridge Winery vineyard, and they do one of those just for their wine club members, and they don't sell it to the public.
Yeah. So when I was at Gordon Estate, Tyler Tennyson's the name of their new winemaker, and Tyler and one of the Gordon family members, they were talking. It's like, yeah, we could probably get, you know, 70 cases out of that, and that'd be perfect for wine club. Just a very special little kind of
right.
side project that they can do for fun and to see how it turns out. And who reaps the benefit of that? It's the wine club members. And the
That's
public
right.
never see those wines because they're just right. special limited availability. Just like the native yeast fermentation that a number of different wineries in the state are doing. Gordon is now playing with some native yeast fermentation Chardonnays, and the raw fruit that I tasted, it wasn't as big and fruity as the other. It was a totally different style.
Mm-hmm.
And how it will taste next year, I have no idea, but I would
the
love to know.
The winery could do, the small wine shop, is like what Norway does. If they have a really good buyer, they should make sure that every single wine in there is fantastic, no matter what price, so that when somebody
right.
comes there, they know, I could be safe here buying a $15 bottle of wine because this person put some thought behind it. And if they had that kind of reputation, that wine shop would be overflowing with people.
I agree 100% with you. And I find it so frustrating when I go to the grocery store next door and I look and half of the wine they have is bulk, mass-produced stuff mm-hmm. I would never in my life buy. Never.
Right. So you go to a wine shop hoping that that's what they're going to be doing. They're going to be going out for you to these little tiny wineries that Costco doesn't carry and no one else carries and finding those great wines that are overlooked. That's what they should be doing.
I would hope that is exactly what they're doing. And once again, when you mention vintage, yeah, some vintages are better than others. And if you're doing your job, you're going to snap up the good vintages and maybe go light on the vintages that aren't quite as good. And fill in, you know, maybe buy something else from someone else, you know, just to fill in that gap. But yeah, if you have a wine shop, you should be tasting the wines before you buy them, I hope, and have a good idea of the reputation of that winery, and sell that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And every now and then, it may not be good next year. You might have to go somewhere else the next year. You can't just rely every year.
Yeah, if you get a difficult customer, just like, well, I'm going to open that bottle and we're going to taste it together and see if I can't sell him half a case or a case of it. You know,
that's right. Have you heard of the Corvide winery in Washington?
Corvide.
Corvide, yeah.
The Crow.
Uh-huh. How's that?
So, really good.
Because my sister just went over to a local winer shop, and this is what made me think of it, and they had recommended the Lenore Syrah.
Let me see if I reviewed it a while ago. Let me see if I can find it. I don't see it.
Looks like they're sourcing it from the Yakima Valley and the Horsehaven Hills, and that's great fruit. So I imagine it must be pretty good. But it's in the $15, $14, $15, I think even $13 price range.
Yeah, it's a good wine. I can't find my review. I've been sipping wine, so my brain cells aren't firing as quite as good.
Yeah, they age it in predominantly neutral French oak, which is interesting. So that preserves the bright berry and savory aromatics of the wild and gamey varietal that it is.
Yeah, I was supposed to visit their vineyard earlier this year because I met the winemaker.
Oh, really?
Vineyard manager, winemaker, and I was at a wine tasting. And I have his business card somewhere, but we emailed, but I never went over there and visited. They produce wines in Washington and in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend all their wines.
Well, let's go ahead and finish off our show for today, and we're going to do another one on the northernmost, you know, winery in the world over in Norway. But we're going from kind of the southernest Chile all the way up to the northernest Norway, and it's going to be a big difference in quality, I can assure you.
Mm.
But we'll go ahead and have any last thoughts on the wine that you're drinking there, the Montes?
The Montes Alpha for 2008. You know, it's time to drink it. And I think for $18, terrific value, especially for a slightly older wine. Okay. And if you have a chance to get their 2015 Sauvignon Blanc, highly recommended. Gorgeous wine, just beautiful. And then, of course, their 2012 Carmenere from the Colchagua Valley, sustainable, dry farmed, also very good. And if you are curious at all about Carmenere and learning what Carmenere tastes like, I would look for the Montes Alpha 2012 Carmenere. Take it home, you know, open it up. Give it a little air and see what all the fuss is now about Carmenere. It is not Merlot. And this Merlot, I suspect, may have a little more Carmenere than perhaps is stated in the tasting notes.
Ah, okay. Now, is that Carmenere from Montes, is it pretty easy to get, the 2012?
I think so. You know, it has a suggested price of $20. You could probably also get it probably around $18 or $16. Mm-hmm. If you're in a large city, it'll be easier for you to find. Same with the Sauvignon Blanc that has a suggested price of $14. So if you're in a large city and you shop around, you could probably get it for a few bucks less. They both great values. And of course, they make Syrah and Cabernet and Chardonnay. So anytime you see the Montes Alpha, it has an angel on it.
Okay.
And if you see that angel on the bottle, the Chilean wine, I would, you know, grab it and take it home and see what they're all about.
All right, I've got it on my list. All right, well, cheers, William.
Cheers.
Thank you for your thoughts on Chilean wine.
It was fun.